This is a story about tigers and strawberries that has many forms. There's a Japanese Zen form and a Taoist form, and which makes it one of those folk tales that is true in many cultures. And in this story, there is a man walking across an open field when suddenly a tiger appears and begins to chase him. So, of course, the man begins to run. The tiger, of course, is running faster and gets closer and closer and closer. And the man sees that they are coming up to the edge of a cliff. And he thinks, well, I think my best option is to go over the edge of the cliff. And he notices a vine just in time, jumps over the edge of the cliff, hanging on to the vine. And he holds on tight. And he looks up and he can see that the tiger is trying to figure out how to climb down the cliff. And then he looks down below him to see how far down is it and sees that there is a tiger down there as well. Tigers above and tigers below. So he just hangs on and decides to wait. And he looks up and notices that there's a small mouse or something crawling along the vine, gnawing at it here and there. And he thinks, I may not have to wait this out for very long. The vine is getting little holes in it here and there. And as he looks up at one tiger and down at another tiger and back up at the mouse gnawing on things, he notices that there is a strawberry plant growing on the side of the cliff with one strawberry that's perfectly ripe. So he reaches out from where he is on the vine, picks the strawberry and puts it in his mouth. And it is delicious. That story about the tigers and the strawberry has always annoyed me a little bit. Sounds like, when I read it earlier, it sounded like it bothered a few of you as well. I think it's because if I was surrounded by tigers, I would not be nibbling on strawberries. I would be hollering and kicking at the cliff and throwing clods of dirt at the mice and certainly not being zen. So why have I told you a story that I find annoying on this fall morning? Well, for one thing, these annoying stories are annoying because they tug at me, at all of us. They tug at that spot where we have some work to do still. And that is, of course, what church and spiritual community is for, is to tug at those places where we still have inner work to do. How's that for a purpose of church life to annoy you a little bit? No, the annoyance is not the purpose. The purpose is to keep us from accommodating our lives to the places in ourselves where we are struggling to grow and change and take risks. So, am I saying that we have to be surrounded by tigers to really appreciate the beauty of strawberries? The old line about there has to be darkness in order to have light. I don't think so. I don't think that tigers are necessary to appreciate the beauty of life. There is plenty of sweetness without the tigers. We're just as likely to miss the sweetness because we're freaking out about tigers as we are to miss it because we're wishing that the strawberry was just a little bit bigger, or that the berries were more consistent, or that their season lasted just a little longer, and miss that they're sweet and beautiful right now. Which is how I get back to living gratefully. And thinking about how does one live gratefully while there are indeed tigers prowling. In the words of Brother Steindl Rast, the Benedictine monk who has thought about gratefulness for decades, there are things for which we cannot be grateful, but we can still live gratefully. There are things for which we cannot be grateful. But we can still live gratefully. You do not have to be grateful for literal or metaphorical tigers, except perhaps at a distance. Which is why I think that story is useful and annoying to me. The man in the story is not being grateful for those tigers that are prowling, waiting for him. He is not being grateful for the cliff or that mouse chewing on his lifeline. But he does figure out how to be grateful for the strawberry, for the sweetness, for the joy of living, for the being there to experience that. And those are things that are worthy of gratitude, even if there are tigers prowling. And this, I think, is why I so often hear people after memorial services struggling a little bit to put together the feelings of warmth and connection and appreciation that come with the service, with their feelings of grief and emptiness. We can't be grateful for death and loss and sorrow. But we can, in the midst of that, be grateful for life, for kindness, for the connections that carry us through pain. Brother David talks about this holding together the sorrow and the sweetness of life. He grew up in Austria in the 1930s and 40s, and I believe he was one quarter Jewish heritage. So it was a frightening and grim time to come of age. And it was in that context that he began his lifelong gratitude practice. This was long before he was a monk or part of a practicing religious community in that way. He, on his own, started a daily practice of noticing what in that day, what in his life, he could be grateful for, despite the tigers that were circling. And it was during this time that I imagine he came to viscerally understand that every day is a gift, that each day might not happen for us. And it does, if we're still thinking about it. And Brother David had a somewhat pragmatic reason for having a gratitude practice, which I talked about last week, that it turns out that on the whole, people are happier when they have a practice of noticing what they are grateful for every day. And because gratitude dispels fear, which then makes space for joy and engagement and more of that joy of living. On his gratefulness website, Brother David has a page of grateful news. And in the face of one terrifying news story after another on National Public Radio or whatever news source you listen to, it is useful and kind of a relief to find a place where they list news of things that we can be grateful for. One of the stories that's still up on the page is of the news of who won the Nobel Peace Prize this year. And of course, it was given to two people together this year, which is, I think, especially delightful. One of those people is Malala, who I did a sermon about last year and who you may have read her book and you may have had many chances to hear about her life in Pakistan as an activist for education and education for girls. And also to, I'm going to pronounce his name wrong, Kailash Satyarthi, an Indian child rights campaigner who has also worked in very difficult circumstances so that children can have lives. Together, they won that Peace Prize, and they were both responding to terrible circumstances. Malala was shot. So in the lives that they were responding to, there was much that one cannot be grateful for. And yet they are good news. Their gifts to the world are indeed gifts, freely given. Neither of these people was compelled by outside forces to make the world better. In fact, they were compelled by outside forces not to do so. But they gave of their souls and their conviction and their great hopes. And so we have great gratitude for them and great gratitude for what is possible. So how do we turn our minds to gratitude in the midst of terrible difficulty? How would you, dangling from the edge of a cliff, tigers above and tigers below, notice that there was a strawberry and eat it and not just lose your mind? I think part of it is fake it till you make it. By which I mean it's a matter of training the mind to attend to different things, which is why that story is told in the Zen tradition so much, because they are about training the mind. Our minds, of course, are wired to jump off cliff edges and panic, but they can be taught to do something different. And that is why we're having a month of gratitude here, that we might learn to attend to our own experiences a little differently. And of course, it's not as simple as deciding, because you have probably already today decided to do something and then not done it. It happens all the time. Deciding isn't quite enough. We have to practice it over and over and over. We practice if we're learning to play the cello. We practice if we're learning to drive. In my household, we're practicing to use a spoon. Practicing is part of being human, and it's how we learn to engage the world in the way that we want to. So we practice being grateful. And it can seem sort of stilted and forced at first. But just like with the spoon, which seems incredibly awkward if you've watched someone learn to use a spoon for the first time, it eventually becomes second nature. So this morning I'm going to invite you into a guided meditation from Brother David. And it is a meditation practice that might annoy you. And it's a brief experiment. So in these few minutes that we're doing this practice together, you could simply observe that your mind is being annoyed. And this practice might make you curious. It might be hard to pay attention to this practice as it happens. This practice might feel to you like rain on dry soil. However you experience it, I invite you to come back after the service for a going deeper conversation right here in this space. Take a few minutes after the service ends and get some tea or cookies in the other room, and then come back and talk over with others what your experience with either this meditation that we'll do in just a moment is like, or what your other attempts at having a gratitude practice in the past week have been. It's helpful to share your decisions and practice with other people. Hear that you are not, in fact, alone dangling over the edge of a cliff. If you can't stay this week for that conversation, there will be many more chances for going deeper conversations.